everyone. Welcome back to the Congressional App Challenge Debugged podcast. I'm your host, Medha, and today our guest is Natalie Lau. Natalie Lau is the executive director of the App Inventor Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit founded by professors and engineers at MIT and Google with the mission of empowering students to create meaningful technologies that can transform their lives and uplift their community. She received her Bachelor's of Science, Master's in Engineering, and PhD in Electrical Engineering and Computer Science from MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab, where she developed database and AI components and led research curriculum development and teacher training for App Inventor initiatives across the globe. At MIT, she was co-creator and instructor for the undergraduate courses Deep Learning Practicum and led the trajectory team for the MIT Inclusive AI Literacy and Learning Project. Natalie serves as an expert on Mission for UNESCO's AI and the Futures of Learning Project, where she is developing the UN's AI Competency Framework for school students. Natalie, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Super excited to be on this podcast.
Thank you for coming on. And so I'll just jump right in. You've done so many cool things in AI and at MIT. How did you first get started? Like, where did this passion come from? And like, how did you end up where you are?
Yeah, I think when I was younger, I never thought this is what I would be doing growing up. I think my passion always originated with education. So I was born in Thailand and I was raised by my grandparents from birth until I was like 5 or 6. And my grandmother was an elementary school teacher. So I would always see her like preparing lesson plans. She would have students over at our house and just like teach them. So I always thought growing up like, oh, I want to be doing something in education. And when I immigrated to the US with my parents, they're both electrical engineers. And I was just like, oh, this like science thing is pretty cool. I would hear them talk about work at the dinner table and like putting up power lines and providing electricity to rural America. So I grew up in Tennessee and Ohio. So I got into science. And when I went to college, I actually thought I would major in electrical engineering and do power grid stuff. But I think at the time, computer science was like just booming. And there were so many internship and research opportunities, and I just got sucked in because it was also exciting. So I got into CS that way.
It's so cool that now you're in a place where you've culminated all of those things you grew up around, right? Like education and electrical engineering, and now you've kind of brought your own twist onto it. I think it's so cool to look back and see how that impacted you. So I'm curious, like, how during college, how you kind of found your path and how you kind of, like, went from choosing computer science and now you're, you know, part of, like, the App Inventor Foundation and on UNESCO's board and everything.
Yeah, I think when I first entered college, I didn't think I would do grad school. I didn't think I would do AI. I was, like, a very excited undergrad. So I joined every single club that was interesting to me. And it was
as
like,
you should.
Yeah, it was great. I recommend all of the students who are listening do that and try it. And I think I found one or two that I really loved. And there was one program at MIT that like made a very profound impact on me. And it's called the MISTI Global Teaching Labs program. So they send MIT undergraduates all over the world to teach at high schools or middle schools in different parts of various countries. And in my junior year, I was sent to Barcelona, Spain, which is very cool. I taught high school computer science for about 1 month. And the computer science teacher there was amazing. He just like gave me his class and was like, you know, you go and have fun and have at it. And I think at the time they were learning a lot of like very basic technology skills. And as someone who codes, I was just thinking of like, how can I get them to be excited about coding and see the power of it in 1 month, which is a very short time frame. So I was just like Googling like what activities I can do. And I found MIT App Inventor. And I was like, oh, it's from my university. It's free. It's open source. There's a lot of free curricula. Let me try it. So I had the students just like work on a few basic apps in the first week. And after 1 week, they had like recipe apps and like game apps on their own phones. And a lot of the students just like, it was a eureka moment for them. They were just like, whoa, I can make apps and I can be a creator of technology instead of just someone who's consuming these technology and apps made by other people and companies. So that was a like big transformation moment for me. And when I came back to MIT for the spring semester, I literally just like found the professor who works on this project, knocked on his door and asked if I could help out in any way. And this is Professor Hal Abelson. He's an amazing mentor. And he, of course, like took me in, which is why I'm here today. And he was the one who convinced me to do grad school as well.
That's awesome. So I have so many questions based off of that. I think my first question that I want to land on is like, how did you kind of foster that mentorship relationship? I think as like undergrads or young students, you're constantly, or even as an early career professional, you're constantly looking for like that perfect mentor or the mentor that you need for that moment. How did you kind of foster that relationship? And do you have any anecdotes or lessons learned that would be great to share?
Yeah, I think each like mentor-mentee relationship is really different, and it depends on like your needs and your communication styles, as well as the mentor's communication styles and needs. Mm-hmm. I think Hal and I were just like a really great match when I first started. I was like super eager to just do anything and help out. I was like, there's nothing that I'm not willing to do. And right. For his lab, there was a lot of like education workshops and curricula they were building. So even though I had a CS background, I didn't start out developing code. He was just like, why don't you like help out with teaching workshops to like Boston public school kids?
Right.
We had this new Lego component at the time. Like we've built the blocks for it on App Inventor already. Can you think of a few like really fun tutorials that kids would love to work on? So I did like bits of everything. And then I also helped make a website for like teacher communication. So like really learning as much about the organization or team as possible when you first start out and seeing like where you can make the most positive impact and contribute in a way that helps other people most was my strategy. And I think I give a lot of kudos to Hal. He's just an amazing mentor. He's like won a bunch of awards for teaching and education. Right. And he like really knows how to guide you on figuring out what you want to do, what the key problem you're trying to solve is. So I think for younger researchers, there's something that like excites you and captures your attention about a specific topic or research project. And you may not have like a good reason why. It's just like, it's very fun for me. And he'll really like guide you through the Socratic method and ask you questions about like, how does this impact X audience or X community? How do you think this could tie in with these other topics that you may not have thought of? If any of those connections seem interesting to you, are there groups or other research labs or other people that you should reach out to try to collaborate? So lots of kudos to Hal.
That's amazing. I love that. And so my second question for you is, how did that conversation go where he convinced you to apply to grad school? And why were you against grad school? And then how did you end up getting 2 grad school degrees?
Yeah, so my mother actually went through grad school, and she did that while I was in middle school and elementary school, I think. And I just like saw how hard it was. And I think I was just like, oh, I don't want to go in at 6 a.m. and come home at 9 p.m. and have to go in on weekends. She had a great time, but I was just like, I'm sad I miss my mom. So I had this like negative impression of grad school. And when I went to MIT, my plan was to get my bachelor's degree and go work at a big tech company. Like I love program management. I did a few PM internships at Google and Apple, and it was just like a really good fit for me. So that was my initial plan. But then after working with Hal, he was just like, you're really good at the education stuff. You seem to really love it. Why don't you just like stay for one more year and do a master's? We can get that done for you in a year, and you can like work on this new project in Hong Kong that we've set up and travel there and teach kids there. So I was just like, okay, it's only 1 year. I can do that. It sounds like a great program. I'll put off my career plans for one more year. And then during that year, AI really blossomed at MIT. It became like a huge thing. And he had me play with some AI blocks through App Inventor. And I was having a really good time. And he was just like, Natalie, you know, AI is becoming a big thing. I think you should just do a PhD on AI. And I told him at the time, like, I don't want to spend 7 years at a PhD. That's like not my dream.
That's insane.
Yeah. And I was just like, I need to get it done in 3 years, or I don't think I want to do this. And he was like, okay, we can make that happen. So I was like, all right, I'll try it out. So I guess it was like, first he got me to do a master's, and then I really enjoyed the research, and he got me to do a PhD.
That's amazing. And so tell me more about Hong Kong. What was that experience like, in terms of just like interacting with the culture? And then also, were there differences in how you structured curricula between Boston Public Schools and Hong Kong or anywhere else?
That's a really great question. So the Hong Kong project, I think it's been going on for 6 years now, since my master's. It's a really large and impactful project in Hong Kong, sponsored by the Hong Kong Jockey Club. And also currently, I think the Education Bureau of Hong Kong is picking it up. And the idea was that every single primary 4 through 6 student should be learning computational thinking. And they thought App Inventor would be a great tool to do that with, since it's blockchain.
For sure.
And you're making apps that, you know, impact the world. So the first few years that I was a part of it was like scoping out what the curriculum should look like to fit towards educational standards, which are obviously different from the US to other regions. Right. And then also learning about the teachers and the teaching culture, as well as the students and their expectations. And I think one big difference in Hong Kong was the parents are very involved. Compared to the US, where it's more like teacher and student have a very close relationship and the parents are slightly less involved. So I think at MIT, we really focus on the idea of like constructionism and computational action. So we think students learn best when they're actively creating something that has personal meaning to them. And through App Inventor, we wanted the curriculum to be more open. So we wanted students to be able to like make projects on things that they were really interested in. So like, for example, if they had a grandparent who had hearing issues and couldn't hear the kettle boil, they could train an AI to listen for the kettle sound and alert the grandparent through a vibration or something on their phone. So that was like the kind of idea that we had for what students could build. But I think working with the teachers in Hong Kong, we had to understand like what level the students were coming in at and what time and resources they had during the class. So we kind of scaled those like ideas back a little bit to be more standardized. And I think it ended up having a lot of impact. There's now an appathon in Hong Kong where students can take the knowledge that they gain from the Cool Think program and apply it in creating an app that is specifically for them and their community and compete, very similar to the Congressional App Challenge.
That's amazing. To think about like how the skills and learning from MIT have really impacted Hong Kong. I'm curious, has there been any sort of involvement in like expanding to other cultures? Like how does that look like? And let me know if it's proprietary information.
Oh no, it's not. We're completely open and public about our reach while protecting user privacy, of course, since we're a nonprofit. So App Inventor is in every single country and region in the world. Last year alone, so in 2023, we had 11.2 million users across the globe.
Wow.
And I think our highest growth regions are Asia and Latin America. So I think like Brazil, Colombia, Mexico, huge growth. And then in Asia, like Taiwan and Hong Kong are the two regions with the most users. I think because of the program that I mentioned earlier with Cool Think, App Inventor is taught in 80% of all Hong Kong public schools. And then in Taiwan, this year was our first year collaborating with the Ministry of Education and hosting an appathon through App Inventor as well.
That's incredible. And is this appathon like a hackathon, or is it over time?
It's over time, very similar to a Congressional App Challenge. So we tell students, like, find a problem in your community that you want to solve through technology, do the user research, do the interviews, and then create an app. And then we select the winners.
That's absolutely incredible. And so I'm curious, like, what are some of the key takeaways or learnings that you've received outside of, you know, creating standardized education and curricula that have been able to help improve the MIT App Inventor or like the way that you've thought about it?
So I think in the past 2 years, AI has been the hot button topic. Mm-hmm. Everyone's so interested in it, and it's going to impact the world in a really huge way.
Right.
So my main focus is, how do we make AI education equitable and accessible?
Right.
And I think like one key component of that is the resources for teaching it have to be free for students or teachers from under-resourced areas or low-income neighborhoods. And that's somewhere we're putting a lot of effort into. And another piece is, this is like quite interesting. I think AI is different than other technologies we've seen develop in the past in that it's developing super quickly. So I was talking to some curriculum developers, and they were kind of like very overwhelmed because they had a curriculum laid out for ChatGPT-3. Mm-hmm. And then they were done and doing all the editing and the publishing and the teacher professional development and workshops.
Right.
And then before they were finished publishing all of those, ChatGPT-4 already came out. And there were enough differences that they were just like, oh my gosh, like how do we keep up with this? So I think the key point here is like with AI and with technologies that develop really rapidly, as educators, we shouldn't be focusing on teaching the material. We should be focusing on teaching students and teachers how to learn. So like, how do they go out and keep up to date with what's happening in technology? How do they kind of educate themselves? So what's really important here is like the critical thinking skills, being able to find reliable sources of information on the internet and other stuff related to that, instead of just like rote memorization of what this is and how do I use it?
Yeah. I definitely feel like even when I learned, right, I feel like I grew up learning, like when you first learn your times tables, it's rote memorization. And then when you get to calculus and stuff, that's when it starts becoming interesting, like mathematically speaking, in terms of like, why am I learning this? Like, how does this impact things? So I'm curious, I want to call back to what you said about teaching computational thinking in Hong Kong. What is the impact of that? Like, how does that impact the way that you know, teaching computational thinking to students in elementary school or middle school, how does that impact, you know, the way that they lead their lives or approach problems or strategies in the future? Like, what's your take on the research for that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of great research on how computational thinking isn't just developing coding skills. It's developing like logic and critical thinking skills.
Yeah.
It helps students figure out how to analyze problems, how to break down problems, and how to solve them with other people as a team. So I think even if students don't go into technology areas, those skills will be valuable no matter what they're doing. I think another really important thing that Hong Kong did super well here is they started the program in primary four, which is fourth grade.
Right.
For us, we really care about like underrepresented minorities in computer science. And a lot of research shows that for like girls especially, the earlier they're exposed to technology and the sciences and fields where currently there aren't a lot of women, the more likely they'll see themselves in that role or doing that field in the future. So I hope that this will have some sort of impact for them down the line as well and open up their interest to STEM and CS.
For sure. This has been an amazing conversation. I want to really quickly flip to your work with UNESCO and first hear, how did you get involved, and then what has your work looked like so far?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting story. I think it first started at the end of my PhD. So I published a dissertation, as all PhD students do, and a huge part of my dissertation was focused on an AI education framework. So I was trying to outline, based on my research, what are the knowledge, skills, and attitudes that we should be trying to educate students with respect to AI. It's very similar to computational thinking, but for like machine learning and artificial intelligence. And I think most grad students, when you finish a thesis, especially one that's like 100 pages long, you assume that nobody will ever read it. And I think that's often the case. And I was just like, oh, it's going to sit in MIT's archives forever.
Right.
But about like 6 months after, UNESCO reached out to me. I was like, hey, Natalie, we saw your thesis. It's really cool. And we're thinking about creating an AI competency framework for all students of all UN states, for, you know, countries to look at and use to guide their own policies. Would you be interested in joining this project? And of course, I said yes. So it's been a really amazing experience working with the team at UNESCO and also the other collaborators that I've met through UNESCO. And we're still finishing up the draft. I have a meeting later today with my friend Kelly to finish it up. And I think we'll have it done by the end of this year. So I'm really excited for UN member states to take a look, and of course, like other people as well, and see how it can help in their AI policy and AI education regulation making.
That's amazing. I look forward to hearing more about that. I'm sure it'll make headlines. So I'm sure that's awesome. And so what are you most proud of so far? I feel like you've had a really long career. I'm curious, like, what are you most proud of?
I think the past 3 years since I started the App Inventor Foundation with Hal and Mark and Jeff from MIT and Google have been like the most amazing and transformative years of my career. And within that, I feel like the thing that I'm most happy about is being able to highlight students' stories. So App Inventor has huge reach, 11 million people every year and growing. But we didn't have a lot of good examples of projects that students had made. So oftentimes beforehand, we would hear about student projects after they made the news or like were the front page cover of like Time magazine. But we started a new program to have students like send in their apps and tell us their stories, the appathons. So I've been really, really honored to like meet the students in person and been able to like travel and see where they come from and learn more about their stories. So I would say like highlighting our students.
That's absolutely amazing. And then my last question for you is, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give to your 18-year-old college freshman self?
Oh, that's very easy. Make sure to sleep enough, eat healthily, and exercise, because that is my greatest regret from college. I didn't sleep enough, and I think I feel like these habits you carry with you through your later life as well, and it has impact on your health and how well you perform academically and everything. So obviously I was fine, but that's what I would tell myself to focus more on.
I think kids these days, myself included, need to hear more about sleeping more.
Yes.
Well, that's amazing advice. Thank you so much for this conversation. I've learned so much from speaking with you, and it's so clear how passionate you are about your work, and it's infectious. So I'm sure everyone who's listening is having a wonderful time listening. Wanted to give you a chance, if there's anything else you'd like to add for our listeners, to speak now.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'd invite you to check out appinventorfoundation.org and appinventor.mit.edu. Those are our two websites for our programs. And if you're interested in learning, all of the resources are free. And if you're interested in participating in our appathons, as well as House of Code and Congressional App Challenge, we have one coming up. It's called the Global AI Hackathon. And if you subscribe to our mailing list or check out our social media, you'll see an announcement in the next few weeks.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Natalie. I really appreciate this conversation. And hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.